Solomon Northup stood in a Washington slave pen, chains biting into his wrists, trying to comprehend the impossible. Days earlier, he'd been a respected violinist in Saratoga Springs, a free man with a wife, three children, and a reputation for both his music and his work ethic. Now, stripped naked and beaten until the paddle broke across his back, he was told his very identity was a lie. His free papers? Gone. His name? Erased. His protestations of citizenship? Met with the lash. This wasn't supposed to happen to someone like Solomon. Born free in 1808 New York, educated beyond what most Black Americans could dream of, he'd built a good life through talent and determination. But in 1841, two strangers offering circus work led him to the nation's capital, plied him with drugged drinks, and sold himself. What makes his 12-year ordeal so haunting isn't just its brutality. It's how quickly the veneer of freedom shattered, revealing a truth many free Black Americans lived with daily. Their liberty existed only at society's discretion, revocable at any moment through violence and legal complicity. The slave pen operated with chilling efficiency. Solomon found himself among others: Clemens Ray, an intelligent hack driver, 10-year-old Randall, crying for his mother, and Eliza, her master's mistress for 9 years, who bore his daughter Emily. Promised freedom, she was tricked to Washington and sold. In New Orleans, they were scrubbed, dressed, and trained to look smart for buyers who examined them like livestock, feeling muscles, checking teeth, ordering private inspections of naked bodies. Solomon's violin skills became a selling point. Then came slavery's deepest cruelty, family separation. Randall was sold away from his mother. Eliza's hysterical weeping nearly earned her a whipping. Days later, despite her desperate pleas, Freeman tore little Emily from her arms as the child screamed, "Don't leave me, Mama!" This wasn't exceptional. It was routine. Thousands of families shattered this way, their anguish dismissed as property management. Solomon's unflinching documentation forces us to confront what peculiar institution actually meant: the systematic destruction of human bonds for profit. William Ford, Solomon's first master, seemed different. A Baptist preacher who treated slaves with relative decency, gathering them for scripture readings and rewarding good work. Solomon's ingenuity flourished under Ford. When tasked with transporting lumber, he devised a system to float logs down Indian Creek rather than hauling them overland, earning him the title "smartest nigger in the pine woods." Yet this relative humanity existed within an inherently dehumanizing system. Financial troubles forced Ford to sell Solomon to John Tibbetts, a cruel carpenter who resented Solomon's intelligence. When Tibbetts attempted to whip him over trivial matters, Solomon fought back, overpowering and whipping Tibbetts instead, an almost unthinkable act of resistance. Only the overseer's intervention prevented immediate execution. Left bound in scorching sun for hours, Solomon reflected, "Despite my agony, not once did I conclude that a slave was happier than a free colored citizen of the North." Even slavery's most benevolent form remained fundamentally degrading. Ford's genuine kindness couldn't protect Solomon from sale, couldn't grant him agency, couldn't acknowledge his full humanity. A slave's existence depended entirely on whoever happened to own them, a terrifying vulnerability that no amount of merit could overcome. Edwin Epps embodied slavery at its most brutal. Large and portly with a sharp expression, he forced slaves to dance when drunk and whipped them for pleasure when sober. Life on his cotton plantation followed relentless rhythms: dawn to dark labor, 10 minutes for cold bacon at noon, nightly weigh-ins followed by whippings for those missing their quota. They slept on wooden planks with single coarse blankets in windowless, floorless log cabins. Solomon struggled with cotton picking despite repeated beatings. Epps eventually reassigned him to cutting wood and hauling cotton. During sugarcane season, Solomon's cutting skills made him valuable as a driver, leading gangs on neighboring plantations. The most heartbreaking figure was Patsy, exceptionally strong, naturally joyful, capable of picking 500 pounds of cotton daily. Yet she suffered terribly as the object of Epp's lust and his wife's jealous hatred. When Patsy left without permission to obtain soap, Epps ordered Solomon to whip her. When Solomon hesitated, Epps threatened to whip them both. Forced to comply, Solomon struck while Epps demanded harder blows. Eventually, Epps seized the whip himself, continuing until Patsy's back was raw and bleeding. From that day forward, Patsy's spirit was crushed. Solomon's forced participation reveals slavery's genius for moral corruption. It didn't just victimize the enslaved, but forced them to participate in each other's suffering. Despite profound horrors, enslaved people created vibrant culture in oppression's margins. Christmas brought three precious days of relative freedom, with neighboring plantations hosting elaborate suppers where hundreds gathered in carefully preserved finest clothing. Whole oxen roasted alongside fresh biscuits, preserved fruits, and special occasion pies. After feasting came dancing, where Solomon's violin talents earned him the nickname Ole Bull of Bayou Boeuf, after the famous Norwegian violinist. His skill led to invitations at white gatherings up to 10 miles away, performances providing income and brief escapes. Marriage required only master's approval, with no legal ceremony. Female slave marriages were particularly encouraged by owners seeking to increase their human property through childbirth, though spouses could be separated by sale anytime. Saturday nights became precious opportunities for separated couples to reunite, depending entirely on owners' permission. Solomon's innovative spirit manifested in an ingenious fish trap near the bayou, a sophisticated design with sliding door and movable bottom that captured fish swimming towards strategically placed bait. Through music, innovation, and community gatherings, enslaved people created spaces of dignity and joy within bondage's confines. Throughout 10 years with Epps, Solomon constantly contemplated escape while recognizing the overwhelming obstacles. His most significant resistance was attempting to send a letter north. Though Epps had forbidden reading or writing under threat of 100 lashes, Solomon created ink from boiled maple bark, fashioned a pen from a duck feather, and wrote on stolen paper while others slept. When betrayed by a white man named Armsby, Solomon saved himself through convincing lies, watching his letter and his hopes burn to ashes. Salvation came through Bass, a Canadian carpenter who openly criticized slavery. It's all wrong, no justice nor righteousness in it. Learning Solomon's true identity, Bass risked his safety writing letters north, eventually leading to Henry B. Northrup's journey south to Epps Plantation. As Solomon prepared to depart, Patsy ran from behind a cabin and threw her arms around his neck, crying that he was going to be free, going where she would never see him again. His journey home on January 21, 1853, brought reunion with his family, yet his quest for justice revealed deep-seated prejudices. Though he filed charges against James Birch with prestigious witnesses, the court declared Birch had acquired Solomon innocently and honestly. Solomon himself was barred from testifying because of his race, a bitter reminder that even Northern justice remained hollow for Black Americans. Solomon ends with remarkable restraint. I make no comments on slavery. Readers may form their own opinions of the peculiar institution. This understatement belies his testimony's devastating power. By simply relating his experiences, he created one of slavery's most damning indictments. His unique value comes from experiencing both freedom and bondage. He could articulate precisely what had been stolen, not just liberty, but identity itself. His story reminds us that American slavery wasn't abstract historical evil, but lived experience of individuals with hopes, fears, talents, and relationships. We witness the system's brutality, constant threat of family separation, and how it corrupted everyone, the sadistic Epps, his jealous wife, even the relatively kind Ford, who nonetheless participated in human trafficking. Most importantly, Solomon's narrative reveals the extraordinary resilience of those who endured slavery. Despite overwhelming oppression, they maintained their humanity, forming relationships, creating culture, finding moments of joy, never abandoning hope. Solomon's ingenuity, his solace in music, his determination to maintain literacy all testify to the indomitable human spirit that slavery could damage but never destroy. Nearly 170 years later, his measured voice offers not just historical testimony, but a moral challenge. Recognize every person's full humanity and build a society where no one's freedom depends on skin color. The distance between citizen and plat was only ever the width of a lie, and the complicity of those who chose to believe it.